welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the Friday show for Mac people. Unashamedly Mac, totally Mac, utterly Apple, and no Windows here. So we're joined by our band of merry Mac men. Top left, we've got Mr. Eric Lanigan, fresh from Macworld. Hello, mate.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I'm good. But how was Macworld?
Well, there wasn't a whole lot to see. It was more like the iPad stand and case show. That was a lot. It was just iPad stands, iPad cases. Not a whole lot of Mac stuff, quite honestly.
There was a few things on leads and stuff like that for connectivity, but it was all pretty much iPad accessories.
Yeah. There's one really cool gadget there that I can tell you about, and I've got and one little software gem that I'll save for my cool iThingy. But I'll tell you about the other thing in a minute. Then I'll let you say hi to everybody else first.
Okie doke. Next to him, we've got Dr. Happy Mac, Andrew Stevens. Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Booyah! Good Booyah. Afternoon.
So now we've got a nice lower thirds thing going on here that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I've called you Dr. Happy Mac. Would you prefer that or Andrew?
Andrew's good.
You are the Mac doctor. So
yeah,
doctor in the house.
I think that the whole Happy Mac thing is probably fading into memory, isn't it?
Because nobody's happy with their Mac anymore.
No, nobody remembers the Happy Mac. They just have the boring grey screen with the lovely Apple logo and the gear wheel on it. They forget that your Mac used to smile at you when it started.
Below him, we've got Carl Swagger from the Philippines. Hello, mate.
Yes, good afternoon there. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm all ready to go. We've done the photo show and now we're on to the Mac show. So Carl and I have acquainted ourselves already. And then last but by no means least, Mr. Will Green of British Mac. How are you doing, pal?
I'm very well. I'm very, very well. Yourself?
Yes, very good. Busy week for you.
This week?
Yeah.
Has it?
Well, you got your new logo, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
For your training. Yes. I saw it this
morning.
Did you
like it?
I did. I tweeted out. I liked it. I tweeted good. Back. You've been ignoring me tweets, so what am I? No, you. Your new logo is rather dandy. I think it looks very good. Yeah. And I like the infinity with the double curve over the two eyes. Very, very nice.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I like that a little bit myself. Actually, yes. It's good, isn't it?
Very good, mate. Very innovative. Nice, shiny, glossy thing. So now all you got to do is actually do some work.
I know. That's the problem. That's the stumbling block.
That's the.
However, one problem at a time. I'd say.
Yes.
I've got the logo done and tomorrow maybe somebody will pay me some money for some training, but you never know.
And it's not like you haven't spent enough on it. You're in the same kind of position as I am, having spent money on Bagel Tech to try and get infrastructure together and all that kind of thing, and we're still short of a few things. So if anyone wants to give me a Mac Pro or a 27-inch iMac, they'd be gratefully received. You can have free advertising for the next 3 months.
That's the way to go. Are you a member of the 4 o'clock in the morning club?
What's that?
Oh, it's when you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you think, oh, Christ, what have I done?
Yes.
What am I going to do? I spent all my money and I've got nothing to show for it.
No, I met a guy the other week and he said, I wish I could be self-employed. He said, I really love the idea of being self-employed. You know, hats off to you. It's fantastic. He said, is there any problems? I said, yeah, I haven't had a decent erection in 10 years. It's just, it's the most exhilarating yet scariest thing I've ever done. But I just keep coming back for more. What have I done? Oh dear. Right. Last week, after the cameras stopped rolling, we had a little chat about price of Macs. And it was quite, you know, we kind of truncated it because we had stuff to go and do and Kyle had to go off to the media show. But I thought we could just carry on with that because that was really, really worth having. And it was all about the second hand price. And it came about because I've been badgering Andrew for a couple of Mac G4s, the Mac Minis, just to run the Skype wall behind me. And the price of those now on eBay is about 160 quid. So we're talking, Eric, about $250 here. Not cheap.
For a G4, you said?
For a G4. $250. Yeah. I might be getting you to post me some over soon, so listen up. The other thing is, I had a friend who bought the Intel Mac, the old white one, 3 years ago, at the Apple store at Milton Keynes. And he paid £399 for it. And he sold it last weekend on eBay for £350. He's had it for 4 years and it's cost him 50 quid for the privilege. Secondhand prices of Macs are just unbelievable on eBay. They're beyond crazy. There's none of them that are cheap. There's no model that's crap and cheap and horrible. Why on earth are we paying so much for Macs?
Well, I think with the the Mac Mini particularly, it's because Apple wants so damn much for the new one.
Yeah.
And it's not any more capable in any meaningful way than the old one. it's about the same speed, it's the same processor, you can put the same hard drives in it, it's, you know, same RAM. People look at £645 and they head straight for eBay to see one of the old style ones. Look at the, I'm looking at the prices of them now. £400 is one on eBay right now with a day left with two bids on it, so it's selling. That's £400 for a three-year-old Mac Mini.
Which was £399 when they bought it.
Yeah.
So it's gone up a pound.
So far, it's going to go up more than a pound. It's an investment.
So that's going to finish during the show?
No, it's got a day left.
Oh, it's got a day left, sorry, right. I thought you said an hour. So no. We could do with finding one that's going to finish during the show and then we can compare it. Is the same true on the States, Eric? Have you got, you know, big price over there, big market in secondhand Mac?
You know, I haven't personally gone shopping for them, but what really surprises me is that the G4 is commanding such a price because, yeah, between the Intel Core Duo processors, at least the Core 2 Duos, there isn't a whole lot of difference in speed. But I mean, a Mac Mini that you can buy today has got to be orders of magnitude better than the G4. I mean, if people are buying them especially to do video, you know, like Hulu and things like that, those G4s can't handle that. The new MacBook Air can barely handle full screen flash, so it's really surprising to me.
Well, the debate I had with Kyle last week was whether two G4s would manage Skype on the Skype wall or not. So I'm guessing that they would. But like I said, we've just got a Mac.
No, I don't think they would actually. Well, I don't know. Maybe for standard def, you haven't bought them. You're saying that's what you're using right now, or you haven't gotten them yet?
No, I just wanted two more cheap Macs to run, so I got a complete Mac wall and didn't have to use the crappy Windows PC. But
I wouldn't go anything less than an Intel though.
No, so it's going to cost me £800 to finish off the Mac wall. The damn thing.
I think that's about right because it's what is it 32 is it 32 megabytes of RAM for the video and the I think it's ATI too in those G4s.
Is that it? 32? Oh, that's never going to manage it. That's not good enough. Not good enough at all.
No, I genuinely am surprised. I mean, just baffled. I don't know. What are people doing with those old Mac Minis? There's got to be something illegal going on. They're using them to make drugs or something. Is that $350 for a G4 Mac Mini? That's... I can't even wrap my brain around it.
Well, they've always had a good price on eBay. They've always been an amount of money that was, you know, good in comparison. Depreciation was about 50% over a 3-year period. But, you know, we're seeing now that secondhand Macs are actually cheaper to buy brand new 3 years ago than they are to have had.
Secondhand Macs are cheaper to buy new 3 years ago.
No, yeah. So
how's that work then?
Sorry, I've got my bloody iPad started ringing with Skype on the end. Andy McCaskey's on. He hasn't called me in 2 years.
English had that many tenses, Ewan.
Yes, let's start again. Where was I? Okay, there's a Mac there that's already at £400 that 3 years ago was only £399 to buy brand new. That's how much it's gone up. And my pal sold his for £50 last week and probably has taken a bit of a hit.
It's got to be the popularity of Apple. I mean, we've seen it since the G4 has been released. How many more people want to acquire Apple products? I mean, it seems like the thing to do now. They want an Apple. I mean, even here in the Philippines, people will scrape their money together where money is, let's just, you know, be fair about it, it's kind of sparse for most people here. But they would give anything to have an old G4 MacBook. They would give anything to have that just so they could say that they have an Apple product. And that may be worldwide, that just to say I have an Apple product, I use a Mac. Maybe that's the demand for old is the reason why. Now, the reason why it is more now to buy a secondhand than it was 3 years ago, that I don't understand.
Are they just, I mean, Will, what have you got a view on this or what?
I don't know, really. It's, for me, eBay is... it's a difficult one. I tend to buy eBay maybe late on a Friday or a Saturday night when I've had one too many, and then hide the brown paper packages that come through the door away from my wife as quickly as I can. That's my general experience.
You're buying what on eBay?
I've got to be honest. I bought a couple of Newtons for about £400 because you just get carried away, don't you? Think, oh God. One more bid. Maybe it's less about the value, but more about the competition with fellow eBayers.
You paid £400 for a Newton.
Two of them.
Oh, well, that's all right then. You paid £200 for a Newton.
I'm afraid so, yeah. And then I thought, oh, what a bargain. And then I sold them again at probably about, about 18 months later and got about £50. So there we are. And such is life.
And it's got the functionality of a brick.
Well, I don't know. The Newton 2100 wasn't too bad. It was all right.
Does it still start? Are they working or?
Well, I've actually got one left, and yeah, I've always had this sort of a passion for little computers, pocket computers. I've always been a big Scion fan, and always enjoyed the sort of pocket computer. So that's right. Why I got Newtons. But I've got lots of little pocket computers.
Oh, I've got a Scion upstairs, a Scion 5 you can have. I'll send it you.
Oh, thank you.
It cost you £1,000. No, it cost you a 27-inch iMac. No, I mean, what's eBay saying in the States then, Eric? What's the prices that are showing up there for second-hand stuff?
I don't know. I haven't gone hunting, or it's just I can't even figure out what the market for a G4 Mac Mini is, unless people are running them for something super low end like a web server or something. Because my impression was that the reason people buy Mac Minis is to set them aside to do, you know, their little workhorse in the corner. They're doing streaming. They're doing encoding. They're doing actually one of the things I saw at Macworld was ever since the demise of the Xserve, you've got now companies making these gigantic racks for mounting like 10 or 12, like a dozen Mac Minis of the new kind with the new form factor and everything. And I was talking to the guy and he said that performance per wattage, the Mac Minis, he said, according to Apple, are more efficient than a Mac Pro, which seems really strange to me. I don't know how you can put in those additional hard drives and everything and power supplies and still wind up more efficient for on an Intel Core 2 Duo than you can on a, you know, a 12 core system in the same unit. I don't know how they do that, but that's why people are buying them in that case, to run them as sort of high end cluster devices. And I know people do them as home theater and watch Hulu and streaming and run their DVDs and stuff. And none of those things are do virtualization if they're dipping their toes in the Mac waters and low entry machine. Running Parallels and using Windows apps. The G4 ones can do none of that, so I am truly baffled.
Yeah, no.
You want to hear something funny, Ewan?
Go for it.
I'm looking at eBay right now here in the Philippines. You guys are talking about a G4, right? Well, here's an iMac G3 for 10,000 pesos over here. That's equivalent of $250. And I'm not kidding.
Wow.
I will put the link in the chat room so you can have a look. It's unbelievable.
I guess Mac depreciation is asymptotic. It reaches a point where it just never dips below like $200 or so dollars, no matter how old the thing is.
And it's even the ugly purple version or grape.
The apple grape.
Yeah.
I just went and bought an apple grape.
I mean, I put a G4 iBook, 14 inch, so not the nice one, the bigger one, which nobody loved when it was new. Put that on eBay last week. Got it in from Impart Exchange with a customer. And I thought, oh, I'll get £100 for this. That'll be fine. Sat there. Auction was closing out, £135. I said to my wife, oh, this is brilliant. We're going to maybe make £140. Sat there 9 o'clock on a Thursday evening in utter disbelief as this 900 megahertz G4 machine went up to £255.
I mean, there's got to be some kind
here
of...
Sorry, here we go. I did pull it up on eBay now. Mac Mini... 1.25 gigahertz G4 with a 40 gigabyte hard drive. Buy it now, price $325.
Yeah, so that's
a bargain right there.
On the current exchange rate, that's £200. Just a little under. So that's more than we would pay for that. That's a lot of money.
We're nuts.
This has put me through an agonizing reappraisal of the of my place in the universe. I just have no. This is just so weird to me. I'm looking at, they're all like $250, $225, $379. Oh, that one has an 80 gigabyte hard drive. Oh well.
Oh well, that makes all the difference.
Does it include the original packaging? Now that is the real. That's the real.
Now this one claims it has a warranty. There's no way that a Mac bought 5 or 6 years ago still has this warranty.
It's got a warranty. Oh, not a chance in hell. Well, it might be, you know, like the eBay has got a warranty in his shop or something, but...
The warranty card is still there.
Do you think Steve Jobs is sitting somewhere, now he's got time off, just sat there with eBay bidding all these Macs up, going, this will show them how much...
It could be Apple PR sitting there. They've got enough money. They can just, you know, keep driving those bids up on all the old products. People think, oh, that's quite a brand.
An industrial unit full of Macs they're buying off eBay.
But surely it would naturally follow that if your product is selling well in the second-hand market, it's because of the fact that the main market is going down. You've got a reduction in total sales, therefore people are looking for the cheap deal. What you've just said, Andrew, is exactly that. You know, top end, they're looking at going, wow, 649, I'm going to look and see what I can get on eBay, and that's bumping the price up. Because essentially it's the same. But they're not. Apple are selling computers hand over fist. 4.6 million last quarter went out the door. That's an awful lot of computers to have a second-hand market that's this productive, this healthy. Just what's in them? What is going on?
Lots of microchips.
I guess now we know they raised the price.
Yeah.
I guess now we know they started at $700. It used to be $500.
I mean, I got to say that having, you know, sitting now looking at the fact that I think I'm going to have to buy myself either a Mac Pro or a 27-inch iMac, the pricing is too high. I've never been really bothered about the high-end stuff because I've never thought about buying one, but now I'm thinking about buying one. Like, bless you, Will.
But, sorry, yeah, I'm recovering from a rotten old cold.
All right.
I'm a bit...
That's why we edit.
Yeah. Can I just put something in there, mate? I really tried to figure out which one to go for. In the end, I went for an iMac i7, 27-inch, sort of for my power machine, but I regret it, and I wish I'd gone for... a Mac Pro. So just as a, if you sort of a quandary between which one to go for, I'd go for the Mac Pro.
Why is that? What was the reasoning?
Well, now I'm finding all sorts of restrictions. I'd like to have sort of more than one FireWire port. It's a big thing for sort of multiple cameras. And also there's looking more at the, sort of into the video side, there's a lot more sort of video expansion cards available for the Mac Pro, where obviously there's none available for the iMac. And I didn't realize that I would be restricting myself so much. I don't think this would be the case normally with an average user who wants a Mac to play games or anything else like that. Or just as a functional high-end computer, the iMac is great. If you've got rather specialist needs in video or audio, I thought the iMac would cut it, but it really doesn't. So I'd probably go for a Mac Pro.
That's another £800 you just added to my bill then. Thanks,
go on, mate, spend it. You can't take it with you.
No, I mean, the interesting thing that bothers me about the iMac, and it always bothered me when I had the 24-inch, was the fact that the fans used to cut in whenever they fancied. They just suddenly start up because it had hit this critical load. And if you're doing video and audio with the iMac, are you finding that the fans are cutting in?
Not really. I was going to say fan, Sid, but I thought we'd ignore the pun. No, not really. I don't find that, even with sort of video rendering. And what is this? About this Mac, it's got, I think, 4 gig of RAM, and it's a 2.93 Intel Core i7. So it's a bit of a beast, and it seems to handle pretty much anything I throw at it. But it's not so much that I find the problem. Expansion. The problem is with the expansion, and they're sort of restricting what I can do with it, and maybe going 2 or 3 years forward, then I can see it causing some problems. It's not going to be a problem because I'm going to use this for something else and get a Mac Pro. I thought that's going to be my solution.
Well, we're all sitting here thinking that we're really hard done by, but the one person we've got to share a thought for is for Kyle, who sat in the Philippines with a custom system that takes 6 months to clear, with a Mac Mini G4, and he is paying by far the higher price compared to us. I mean,
he's in the Philippines, though. I mean, all those lovely ladies with the grass skirts and all that.
There are no stereotypes on this show, then.
No, of course not.
Oh, can't we talk about Mexicans?
Go on, then, talk about Mexicans.
Oh, no.
Oh, just piss everyone off. Go on.
No, it was the...
Ellis upset the Japanese last week.
Co got told off for taking the mickey out of Mexicans on Top Gear.
Yes, I saw that. That was... but there's not a lot of Mexicans in the UK, which is okay. But the people in America who listen to the podcast may get upset. And we had a question on the photo show from an American Mexican today. So we love Mexico. Eric's got no choice because of where he lives. So close.
Eric's in Mexico.
Used to be. So tell us about Macworld, Eric, because that must have been gorgeous and dandy and fun. And
sure. So, well, I'll tell you the one cool thing, because I was coming away thinking, oh, this is, you know, glad I went just to see it, but not a whole lot to see there. The one thing, though, that was really cool, and I'm trying to find the exact name as is written here. It's from a company called 101design.com, all written out, TENONE design.com. called the Fling joysticks. And tell me if you've heard about this, because I'm curious how much, you know, word of mouth this has spread so far. It's a joystick that you add to an iPad, and then it's basically, if you know what a Xbox joystick feels like, PlayStation controller, any for the last like 10 years of a game console thumb joystick controller, it adds one of those to the iPad, and it feels just like that. I mean, I was through the roof when I was playing with this thing, saying it. I was like, are you gonna sell out of these things? How are you keeping these all in production? Because this could be a game changer. I think, quite honestly, because if you look at what Sony was just saying with their next generation PlayStation Portable, like the only thing they have to compete with all these other tablets, and specifically the Apple devices, that's where gaming has really taken off. Hasn't really taken off yet on Android. It could, it should. I mean, technically it's capable, but for other reasons, it's really taken off on the Apple App Store right now. They out of nowhere now, they're now the most popular gaming platform, more than Nintendo, more than Sony for portable devices. And now, that was the last thing that Sony had, and even Nintendo, with their 3DS, they added a little analog joystick pad to the thumb on the left side. And then Sony advertised they have two of those in their upcoming machine. That's like all they had left to compete with. But now this thing adds the same size of joystick with a just utterly perfect feel to it. Like the resistance of the little, it's like a little plastic spring, this little plastic coil.
It looks gorgeous.
With two little suction cups, and you just stick it on over a where the virtualized joystick is in your game.
Yeah.
And then you move it around, and it feels like you're using a full-size game controller. It's that smooth and that accurate.
This thing's, it looks like a piece of very nicely milled steel that's polished. It's like an old analog joystick that you used to get Space Invaders machine back in the 80s. But it's beautiful metal. How it's doing the capacitive touch, I'm not sure, but it looks stunning.
It's that metal, actually. It's transparent plastic. I see on the website they call it resin. I don't know what the difference is there, but it just kind of looks like it's metal. The one metal part, though, is actually it does have a capacitive conductor, because that's what's cool. It's got it's got that capacitant piece that is sliding over the surface of the glass screen. Now, this is too big to put on an iPhone, but for a lot of iPad games, and I imagine the same will work just fine with Android tablets and anything else of that form factor. It's transformative. I mean, I would no longer be getting any sleep if I were Sony or Nintendo.
I was looking at the wrong one. God, I'm good. I put a link in the chat.
This is the Fling, I guess, is the brand name Fling, from 10-1 Design. Fling analog joystick for iPad. $30 for the pair.
Little suction cup thing sticks on. Looks really, really nice. And was it really responsive?
Yeah. Oh, it was incredible. I mean, to me, it felt exactly like using an Xbox joystick or a PlayStation or a Nintendo joystick. I mean, just
cool.
I don't know how they did it, but with this little, if you look, you got to see the picture if you're not. I know you are, but you know, the folks at home, because you really can't get a sense of how incredibly simplistic this thing is. I mean, it's completely non-electronic. It's like a little piece of coiled plastic with just the perfect resistance of like a spring that it wants to go back to the center. It feels just like a console joystick. It's incredible.
Hmm. No, very, very good. Like the look of that completely. It's excellent.
Actually, I will say the one caveat, though, and this is kind of odd, is that it only works, and they have a huge spreadsheet, Google Docs spreadsheet that's public that they keep adding to as they get more and more developers. It's their list of what games work with these things. And interestingly, it works the best with games that were not really designed for touch controls. It works best with games that were just kind of very simply, without much effort, ported over with a joystick design from like a console. Games that were really optimized for touch actually don't work with this. It's easy enough for the developers to add that back in, but it's the games where the developers were kind of lazy or just thought that they needed that joystick mimicking an old, old style game controller that this works the best with.
Yeah, I mean, I've just flicked a picture there on the video. It's a great looking thing. So your pick of the show, I would have guessed, based on the way that you've ranted there, mate.
Well, kind of. I've actually got a software program that I'll pick for my cool iThingy not as cool, but probably more useful on a day-to-day basis.
I mean,
did win the Best in Macworld show. It did win that.
Very good. Did it? The Fling? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We were sat here in rainy old Britain watching the feeds. Was there anything you guys saw that kind of piqued your interest with Macworld that made you salivate or get all excited?
The used Mac section.
Yeah. They had the biggest budget.
Yeah.
By a long way.
Right back in the corner. They had a lot of supply over there, though. It was amazing. Good deals.
iOS 4.3 beta 3 came out. That was one of the big stories this week. Anyone actually a member of the developer program? Did they download it and have a play? Or
I'm not that smart.
No.
No. Nope.
Andrew, you're smart enough, aren't you?
Apparently not.
Oh, okay.
No.
anything that struck anyone look at that story, or anyone think that there's anything there that's worth picking the bones of?
I just want the Wi-Fi hotspot. That's all I care about. That's what I want.
Is that going to come for just the iPhone then? Or are we talking about sharing it off the 3G iPad as well as?
Ooh, that's a good question. Don't you think?
The rumors that I've seen have listed only the iPhone. And in fact, first they talk about some of the HTC devices getting that feature on AT&T. So, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I'd be a little bit surprised if they did it on the iPad, though. But the iPhone one looks like it definitely will come eventually.
I mean, the thing that strikes me about all of these things with a lot of this stuff is the fact that you're only paying for data. Data's data. You know, the one bit equals one bit, one byte equals one byte. So if you're paying for a data plan, I mean, the other thing is Verizon is starting to really hump their existing customers. They're up to $45 now for 4 gig of data transfer a month. Now, I pay £20, which is about $32-$35 for a MiFi, and I get 15 gig of transfer a month on that at 3G speeds, and I can use it for whatever I want. So are the devices kind of pushing themselves out of the market of data when actually, you know, data's data. You pay for data, you pay for data, and that's the end of it.
You pay with
data is data.
With the video data, obviously, it's a continual download, I guess, isn't it? So it's taking up, you know, a chunk of bandwidth in a big go, whereas you know, other data uses sort of will check your emails, do a quick browse, and there's lots of, you know, it's on and off the
small
network
packets,
it's allowing capacity for other users. I guess that's the only difference I can see. If you're watching video downloads, then you're going to be hogging bandwidth for a considerable amount of time. Either that
what
or
what I don't like about
I was just going to say either that or mobile phone companies are just acting sucky towards their clients, but I don't really, I can't believe that.
No.
It might be that, yeah. No, what I don't like about the Verizon bit is we're starting to hear this week about they're going to start throttling you for your unlimited data plan.
Yes.
That don't rub me too well.
Rogers are getting upset as well because of the fact they're not going to get to do metering now in Canada as well. It's all been a bad week really for data, hasn't it?
Not well, I got an email from BT, who are my home broadband supplier, and I'm on the £23 a month, which is the unlimited sort of home user account. And they just sent me an email saying, our fair use policy now includes throttling. So
how convenient.
That was interesting.
It always did.
At least that didn't cost you extra, Andrew.
No, true. But I mean, I take sort of Max home for customers, and you put drives in them. I'm doing some evening working, and quite often I'll have 3 or 4 Max sitting in the lounge all downloading, you know, software updates, so I can sort of pull 7 or 8 gigs of data down in an evening quite happily.
But that's the point, is that what they, you know, what everyone counts on is the fact that people are just going to put up their data prices. So, you know, it costs you more to fix a Mac because you pulled more data down, so you then take it and upgrade from there, and you upgrade your price. But the thing is as well that with price increases, all you do is squeeze the small guy out at the bottom, because you can't put your price up because you're in a competitive market, because other people aren't doing it. The one that's willing to absorb it, you've got nowhere else to go. I think it's the problem that we've got with this is that the data that's being consumed is just data, and people should be thinking about, or the providers just haven't got the infrastructure. They're taking your money quite happily, but they're not ploughing it back into investment to keep the thing moving forward and get yourself better and better quality of data.
Oh, I know that feeling here very well, Ewan.
Yeah, you're paying an absolute frigging fortune, dude.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me.
You're worse than the rest of us, that's one satient thought. What about Sony e-reader. Because, I mean, this was interesting. The marketplace has had a bit of stick this week because we've had a counterfeit game appeared in there yesterday. Something that was £10 is now selling for 99 pence, and it shouldn't. And the checking procedure at Apple, obviously, is very, very good. I wouldn't like to reject it. But the Sony e-reader application got rejected on the basis that you couldn't purchase from within the app and the revenue go to Apple. Anyone got the Kindle application?
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
No, I've got that.
Enjoy it. I'd like it to stay there.
Yes. Now, you have we ever bought anything from the Kindle application itself? Or have we had to go back to Amazon and buy it?
You can't buy it from within the Kindle application. You have to go to Amazon.
Yeah. I thought...
Exactly.
So, hang on, let me... Yes, you have to... That's right, the application ducks you out, doesn't it?
And that's the strange things now, is that Apple has implied that they will start enforcing a rule even on those old apps like the Kindle app and the Barnes & Noble Nook application, where they will not allow you to download books that you've purchased from Amazon anywhere else in the world, including Amazon.com, right? Where right now it just pulls those books in as soon as you purchase them. It won't let the Apple will not let those apps do that unless they also offer those books for sale through their iOS app, which means giving Apple a 30% cut.
Yeah, but they're not saying that you can't do it. They're just saying that people should be able to purchase it from within the application as well as.
No, they're saying that they're pointing actually to their license agreement actually says for developers that if you're offering something for sale through the application, it can go out to the web to buy it as long as there also is offered the option to get it straight through their official in-app purchasing mechanism.
I don't have a problem with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's easier for consumers to offer them that option, but I'd say that's awfully greedy of Apple to say that you can't even buy. So, I mean, just think about it. Well, obviously, it's an attack against Amazon, against Barnes & Noble, against those people who have already established businesses like that, where people buy content elsewhere and then suck it in through the web and straight into their iOS device. They're going to say, no, you now have to develop an entirely new way into your application of buying and importing the content through our system, through Apple's system, just so we can take that extra 30% cut.
You know, this has got me thinking about something, right? If they're saying that, and if I'm understanding you, Eric, what about things like Audible just put out an app to buy directly from them through on there? Now, how's that going to work?
That's right. I'll try to find the article for you because we're with the exact quote, but they responded to some request about, or something about their official statement about the Sony e-reader referred the public to the actual text of the license agreement, which they said they are now going to start enforcing more strenuously. And then someone asked them or they just implied on their own that they may start going back and enforcing this now on applications that previously they just kind of allowed through. And those biggest ones would be Amazon, Barnes & Noble, those type of things. And presumably Audible, unless they're offering also the... Actually, well, Audible offers their books through the iTunes Music Store.
Yeah,
so that,
they do.
That might
they do.
Be their way in.
Mm. Will, that's you were right. going
to
say something.
Well, it's probably slightly off the point. I've started to buy the occasional ebook. And the thing that strikes me more than anything is how ugly they are. When you buy a book... a paper one, the typesetter's been there, they've looked at every page, it's all beautifully sort of, I was going to use the word rendered then, but, you know, designed, and it's a real pleasure to look at. And I know Apple is obviously very keen on the aesthetics of the thing, but ebooks are so bloody ugly, aren't they? Am I on my own in this, or?
No, you're right.
They really are, aren't they? I bought a book on How to Train Your Black Labrador the other day, and it's just horrible. It's a good book, but I think one of the problems is...
Do you have to buy a different one if it's a beige Labrador?
Say again, sorry?
Do you have to buy a different book if it's a beige Labrador?
Yeah, you do. it's just totally different.
I think I saw you coming, dude. Sorry, you were saying, go on. How to Train Your Labrador, go.
I can't remember. What's...
You were saying about how ugly it was.
Anyway, they're just damn ugly, I think, is probably the point.
Sorry, mate. I put you off there. I shouldn't have.
They should... You know, sorry.
Go on.
Sorry, Will. I was going to say, Will has a point there, though. And, you know, this might get me kicked off the Mac show for saying this, but I would much rather read a book on the Kindle itself than on the iPad. It's a lot easier on the eyes.
Yes.
I mean, do you find them a bit busy as well, or is it just me?
What do you mean by busy?
I find EPUB stuff, because it's got the pictures and all that kind of stuff in it, I find it a bit busy to read. It's too... There's too much there in too short a space, too much taken away from the text. It's not a pleasurable read experience, whether it looks aesthetic or not.
Well, is it not just a new new medium trying to find its feet, you know, design-wise? I mean, I think if you remember back when desktop publishing first arrived and everyone could get their hands on something that would publish, you got like Parish News magazines had suddenly had 36 fonts and drop shadows and everything everywhere as people went mad and you know, just played with the new thing. And I guess maybe ebooks are in that sort of thing where suddenly people know they can make an ebook and we can change this or we can put a picture in and we can put this lovely background on it. It's like old websites, sort of GeoCities websites with all the blinking, flashing and stuff like that. When you get a new medium, people go mental. And then over the years, they kind of look back and go, oh yeah, right, okay, let's make that nice.
Go on, Will.
So
I was going to say, there's a big difference though, isn't there? For instance, the Parish magazines, etc., were amateur and they were new to the market, to use a phrase. Whereas things like, for instance, let's take Sherlock Holmes for example. If you buy Sherlock Holmes as an ebook, I mean, it's as old as the hills, and the formatting is just as ugly as sin. You occasionally get a picture, but most times you won't. There's very few illustrations in those sort of books. And when you do get an illustration, they're just positioned anywhere that they can. And most times they just position it on a blank page because they can't work out the kerning and the wrapping around. Mm. It just seems so basic when these days, when we look at a website that can look really beautiful. I don't think there's any excuse for it. I think it's just laziness. I think what they're thinking, oh, they're jumping on the back bandwagon. Let's scan the book in. Let's get it onto the web and flog it without any thought. I mean, Apple do so much to make sure the quality of an application or the quality of whatever they're putting into their device is beautiful, except the books.
I got to agree. I think the art of creating a visual experience for the reader has disappeared.
There was a study recently that showed that your reading comprehension is better when you read things with an unusual layout and an unusual font. And when you read things that is just the same font, the same style, the same just bare text, whether it's news or a book, your comprehension is actually lower.
Well, I suffer from dyslexia. And the one thing that that I find very difficult with the Kindle application on the iPad is the fact that you can't have a sans serif font. For some reason, if I look at a serif font, I find it significantly more difficult to read than I do for a sans serif one. And all of the option changes for size and that kind of stuff still make you have a serif font, whereas the Apple books let you choose the font type and size through quite a broad spectrum. And that makes a huge difference to me. But the EPUB stuff, no one thinks about the balance of the text with the picture. And effectively what you end up with is nothing more than it's effectively a PDF. It doesn't work any more intuitively than a PDF. So when you upscale the text or when you try and resize the text, you end up crimping or taking away from the picture. And then you're starting to scroll around. And then, you know, the iPhone, trying to read some web pages on the iPhone is an absolute nightmare because of the amount of scrolling backwards and forwards that you have to do and double tapping to resize. And I think Will's onto a real point there. You know, there's great programs out there at the moment that you can make fantastic looking ebooks with. And the iPad Daily, the daily application for the iPad yesterday, what you've got there is something that's got a phenomenal opportunity for multimedia interaction and resizing and stuff going everywhere and helping the viewer. And what is it? It's an electronic, crappy looking newspaper. And I think you're on the money as well, by the way. We think about surveys, Eric. Did you see the survey this week? You were saying last week about people want to watch you know, written stuff on their written pad. They don't want to see written stuff on the TV, and they want to watch TV on the TV. They don't want to watch it on the pad. 86% of mobile browsing takes place in front of the TV.
Wow.
86%. That was amazing to me. And it came out last weekend, just almost as mystery as we finished doing the show. So you're absolutely right, mate. On the money. You are Mystic Meg, who you've got no idea who she is, but she was in the Sun, mate. She wrote an astrology column.
So it must be real.
It must be true. Absolutely. Have we got any more stories you want to talk about? Because Will's going to jump in if I ask about iThingy. No?
No, I just been a pretty quiet week, I think, hasn't it?
It's been real boring. I think we did well to get 40 minutes
out of it. The Macworld news was a bit of a disappointment. I think Macworld's dead, isn't it? There we go. Macworld is dead.
Eric, you want to come back on that?
No, I think it... Well... It's interesting. I didn't go to any of their conference tracks, their special talks, their developer things, mostly because they cost hundreds of dollars. And I think the people who go to those say that they actually get a lot out of them. So as a conference like that, it may stick around, but the actual expo part, the show floor that costs, I got a ticket for $10. It goes up to like 35. There's really nothing of value to see there. I think they even consolidated that last year. They had a big stage where they did Macworld Live and they had a big stage show and everything. I think this year they actually consolidated their auditorium into the expo floor. I mean, it was really kind of sad. There just wasn't a whole lot to see. I did think of one other thing that's a little bit interesting. I was saying how it's all just these iPad cases, iPad stands. I took a video of one that was just so silly. There are so many solutions out there to turn an iPad into a laptop with a keyboard and a screen that props up. And I think it's so silly. If you look at what these things look like, the cases, if you put an iPad, by the time you've got it in this case that has the Bluetooth keyboard and you've either charged or put all your batteries in the Bluetooth keyboard and you've got it sealed up with the iPad and you open it up and you have to put up a little kickstand to get it to sit up there and you're typing on this little tiny small keyboard. And then when you fold it up, it's like 6 inches thick. It's like, give it up, guys. Because you want a MacBook Air, is what you're saying. You want a laptop. You're jumping through so many ridiculous hoops to turn this iPad into a laptop. Just sell it on eBay. You can probably get twice the price of what you paid for it, according to what we're seeing today. And just get a laptop, get a MacBook Air, because clearly you want a keyboard more than you care about the size, the form factor, or anything else.
I've got the Bluetooth keyboard for the iPad, and I keep coming back to the Apple wallet, the simplest and easiest and most effective wallet, and it lets you use the on-screen keyboard, and I can type just as fast on that as I can type on the little Bluetooth keyboard. Biggest waste of money I ever made. Very happy.
Oh, no, see, I can't do that, though. I'm no good with the on-screen keyboard.
Oh, I like the on-screen keyboard, yeah. Pretty fast. Do pretty good. And I've got fat sausages, mate. Big pork sausages, look. So I can manage. Right, iThingies. Eric, do you have an iThingy for us? Bill's got another beer.
I do. Someone else go next, because I got to make sure I got the precise name for it in the URL.
No worries. Andrew, have you got your iThingy?
My iThingy? Right, yes. Okay. Not an app or anything in touch, but actually, if you fancy, if you've enjoyed listening to us burble on and other things, it's a podcast. So sorry about that. It's a rival podcast.
No, there's no rivals, I don't think. No competition.
What it is, okay, I mean, most of the people here, they've got a Mac, they love it, they use it day to day. We talk about the new stuff, we talk about that. But there's a big history to the Mac, which I'm obviously very keen on, and I probably will, I imagine, is as well. And I alluded to it at the beginning of the cast when I said that people don't remember that the Mac used to smile at you when it started. Now, anyway, there's a podcast out there. It's called Macintosh Folklore Radio, and it documents the starting up of the Macintosh group at Apple, the development of the Mac from scratch, and it's compiled by with the transcripts and interviews with the original Mac development team, and it is a fantastic, glorious trawl in about 50 episodes through the very, very early history of the Mac. And if you've got any interest in computers and what hoops the developers used to have to jump through to make machines work in the limited hardware that they had, the in-house fighting between the different groups at Apple, the creativity, the blood, sweat, tears, lovely. Just download them all, put it on your iPod and just listen away. It's just lovely.
So, while it was probably one of the worst phases of history for Apple, that's back before Jobs came back at the end of the 20th century, that was an entertaining piece of Apple history, if nothing else.
It's before the bad phase, the post Jobs phase. It's before that. This is when Apple was selling the Apple II still.
Oh, right.
And the Mac didn't exist. And then Steve Jobs took the development team, put them in a building, ran the pirate flag up on the building and said, this is it, concurrently with the development of the Lisa. This is the very, very early days that, when these people were producing this stuff, there was no Mac. They were inventing and creating the Macintosh. It's as a piece of computing history, it's just compelling.
I've already subscribed.
You won't regret it.
No. I already, before we finished last week, I'd started downloading Top Gear on Get iPlayer and Automator, Will. I I'm ashamed to say that has become my go-to application. I love it.
It's terrific. Absolutely,
yeah,
terrific.
I've used it too. I got all the back episodes of Hustle.
No, here's the interesting thing, because everyone says make stuff available at a reasonable price and people will buy it. So EA Sports, or EA rather, before Christmas, reduced all of their applications to 99 pence in the UK store. I bought them, and so did everyone else, because apparently they've returned a record quarter for app sales. They've sold 10 times more because they had just a low and reasonable price. And it struck me, looking at Get iPlayer Automated last week, the reason I love it is because I can just go up to my Apple TV, scroll down, find the show, watch the show. If there was an iPlayer interface on the Apple TV, I wouldn't have that program. I would not have it at all. I wouldn't be doing the piracy. It's because I want to watch it on that device. Got to be everywhere all the time. That's the moral of the story. Well done, Will. It was an excellent pick on your part.
Thank you.
Welcome. Kyle, have you got an iThingy?
Yeah, it's funny. We're talking about retro Macs today and prices and old things. Mine is called Mac Tracker, and you can find it at MacTracker.ca. And for those who are here in the chat room, I'll put a link there. Essentially what it is, it can also act as an iPhone app too. They have one in the store. And it provides all detailed information about every single Apple Macintosh computer ever made. All the specs, the OS versions.
Yeah, I've used them.
It's really quite cool.
Yeah, I wanted to buy some memory for my mum's G3 Mac Tower that I had, that I gave to her. I went on there to get the spec for the RAM. Very, very useful.
Yeah, I don't think there's a day in the last 2 years where I haven't fired up Mac Tracker at least once.
It's the must-have app for the Mac man. That's on
and I love
eBay.
That the iOS. I love that it has an iOS app for the iPhone or iPad. It's really, really great.
Brilliant.
And it will play you the startup chime of every Mac ever created.
Like that. I remember I used a similar program years and years ago in OS 9. Is this the evolution of that same program?
That's a very good question, because honestly, I have no idea.
It is. It is the same one.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They do the iPad, iPhone. That's what I think that's the coolest thing, is that they've expanded into the app. And it's free. The app is also free.
I never concentrate when you guys are doing the picks, because all I'm doing is sitting downloading them. I'm sat here with the iPad in my hand trying to find Mac Tracker. Well done, mate. Good pick.
It also allows you to put in, you can make your own notes about each model. So when you're working on them, as they come in and you discover stuff, you can just make a little mental note, or not mental note, but into the app. Say, oh, by the way, you need to do this, this, and this with this app, and this is all Mac, and this is the...
Yeah.
Good pick.
By the way, have we noticed the search capability on the iPad App Store now? You can define by category, release date, customer rating, price, and device.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very worth having. Sorry, anyway, there you go. Will, your cool thing, because is it illegal?
No. Well, I've got two. Well, yes, actually, one of them is. we'll kick off with a legal one, I think. It's an amazing program. I've been a huge fan for years. Well, not a program. It's sort of unique, really, in the history of Mac. And it's one of the very first CD-ROM-based, I don't want to say game, but entertainment interactive. And it's called If Monks Had Macs. And it's an amazing piece of software. I spoke to the chap who wrote it, and it's been going since about 1985, 1986, originally based on HyperCard. The program is the concept that if a monk had a Mac, what would he do with it? And it's just a library of books and poetry and some interesting games. And it's just, you can lose yourself in it. And the great thing, it used to be, I think something like $20 or $25, and Brian used to sort of put it in the post to you from New York. But now it's available to not download for free. As I say, you can't download it off the website, but he has given it out to BitTorrent sites and so forth with his blessing to get for free. So it's a really, really worthwhile
Has it got a donation button?
Well, I was just looking at it. It's only $10 on CD, and it's worth every single penny. It's worth double that. It's an application that stuck with me for years and years and years. I've got it on, run it on both OS 9 and OS 10, and it's one of these ones. It's got a journal that you can write things that you're up to, an ebook reader. It's just great. It's great. 20 years ahead of its time. Really worth looking at. If Monks Had Macs.
By Brian Thomas, and you can get it on rivertext.com. There we go.
That's right. If you want, but you can't download it from there. You have to download it from
right.
If you want it for free, one of the sort of peer-to-peer or something like that.
Brilliant. And your second illegal pick is?
Well, it is not. It's not massively illegal. Just a quick one called MacMame. MacMame. And what this does, it allows you to play the ROMs of the original video games with your joystick, and it's terrific. If you're of a sort of similar age in your sort of 30s, and you remember going to the arcade when you're a lad and putting all your money in and playing Star Wars and yeah. all those great games. Oh, what was that one with the Outrun? And all those sort of games. What this will allow you to do is to run all those original ROMs actually on your Mac, and it's terrific fun. So if you've got... It download it. You can get the ROMs for free. The slightly illegal part is the ROM side of it, but you know, all for the good. It's terrific. MacMame.
Thank you very much, Eric. Your cool thingy. Your eye cool. Your eye thingy. Oh,
aye.
Was that it?
No, that's the startup channel awesome. Macintosh Performa 450.
That's good. You can see where the evolution came, can't you?
Mac Tracker. No, my cool eye thingy is a program that is called. I already closed the window. It has the simplest name, but I always keep forgetting it. It's called Boom. It's a volume utility. Its sole purpose is to boost the volume out of all of your applications. It actually installs itself as a virtual device so that you tell the output of your you know, in system preferences that is the device. Send all the audio to Boom, and it just boosts the audio a lot. And you can also add some equalization. It doesn't do that fancy normalization or applying compressing or compressors or limiters or anything to try to even out the volume. But what it does do is just raises the overall system volume. Now, where this is really useful is like if you're a MacBook Air owner like myself, especially the 11.6 inch, you know that the internal speakers are pretty quiet. And in order to hear even things like Hulu, I had to buy this little... speaker that kind of hangs off the side, and it's not very high quality, but it was just significantly louder because you just can't drive the volume up high enough on certain applications and videos. So this totally solves that problem. It allows you to drive the volume up to actually kind of a dangerous level. So you have to be diligent with exercise caution. Use Boom responsibly. And then the other cool thing is because it has that equalizer, I was able to create a custom equalization curve by really jacking up the bass in certain areas, and the difference in quality that it transformed these MacBook Air speakers into is it's minor, but it makes an appreciable difference. So that's my pick. It's called Boom. It's $5. It's at globaldelight.com/boom.
Very, very good. I've got
it. Actually won Macworld Best of Show. Yeah, or in that category.
Of course, because I've gone there and I've already looked at it. Google Boom Mac volume and it comes up first choice. So well done. My cool thingy is Splashtop Remote. And it's a new application that came out this week, and it's free. So everything that's free, I download straight away. And basically what it is just something that you stick on your iPad or your iPhone, and it also works on your iPod Touch. And... it gives you a little user interface that then lets you directly control your Macintosh over your home network. So any of the Macs that you've got will come up as showing as valid. You just highlight which one you've got, type in the password that you've preset, and you can control your Mac from your iPad. It does pretty well if you're talking about just general interaction. So it's pretty reactive for things like hitting icons, highlighting text, that kind of thing. If you've got a video playing on the screen, though, it gets a bit kludgy, so it's certainly not watchable. You wouldn't be able to watch it as a remote device. I thought that was a rail train. So there you go, Splashtop Remote.
I had the woman downstairs complain about me the other day.
Yeah, but what were you doing to her?
Well, I got one of these chairs. You know, like I thought I'll get me an executive leather chair that's on wheels. And it's great. And you know when you wheel yourself up and down all the time? So I was doing this, and she came and complained. She said, Will, you stop wheeling around, please? Oh, okay.
Well, that's kind of the idea of them, but never mind.
I know.
Yes,
I know.
Startup chime for here we go, the original Macintosh 128K. That's it. That's as good as it got.
Awesome.
And here's one from Macintosh Performa 5300 CD.
Oh, this will be the end music to play out with. That was the evolution there, because that was the 512, but it sounded remarkably like the 128. Mind you, that was cutting lead electronic sound at the time, I suppose, 1984. There we go. Right, thank you, chaps. Where can we get a hold? We need to talk about our sponsors. Our sponsors.
Yes, yes. Don't forget, because there'll be nowhere to get a hold of us without the sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. You'll see them in the top left of the video if you've done it. I've managed to record the whole video without it crashing yet, so it might be okay. UK2.net, they are our hosts, our bandwidth providers. They give us all our domain names for the sites. Thank you, Will. And they also give us the servers that we run off. And last month, we sucked just short of a terabyte just doing audio. So when I stick the video up this month, they're really going to hate us. but they are a fantastic firm. They supported us for the last 2 years now. And we couldn't afford to do the show because the prices that we pay for the bandwidth that we suck up would be too much. If you've listened to the show and you like the show, I'm not asking you to send me any money, although if you send me a 27-inch iMac or a Mac Pro, I'll be quite happy, don't get me wrong. But please do nothing else. Go to bageltechnews.com. There's a tracking link there with UK2s. Just click the link. Even if you don't buy anything from them, please just click the link and go to their page, because it means that they clearly see that people are listening to what we've done. And through some nice emails that we've got from people that we've passed on to UK2, we know that they're buying product through us. So please go to UK2. If you've got anything that you need, give them a try. And hopefully they should be thereabouts on price. Then not just by buying that are you supporting them, you're supporting us as well if you use the tracking link. Thanks ever so much to them, and thanks to you for the people that have clicked through already. Where can we get a hold of you then, Eric? Eric Chime.
That was a Newton Message Pad 2000. I'm at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
Does yours make that noise, Will, or not?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Depends whether it wants to work or not.
Andrew, where can we get a hold of you?
Cool. You can get a hold of me at www.drhappymac.co.uk. At Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter. And of course, you can always find me in the kitchen at parties.
Ah, good man, good man.
And I leave you with the death chime of the Macintosh 2VX.
Nope, couldn't hear it.
Couldn't hear it?
No, couldn't hear it, mate. Anyone else found that one? I can edit that don't worry.
Oh, well, no.
There we go.
Ringtone.
Is that the one? Awesome.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Oh God! This
is the happiest death chime I've ever heard.
It is, yeah.
Sounds like someone's. Oh, someone's at the door.
The train now leaving platform 7 is the 2:30 to Crewe. No, that's a definite start. No, that's my afternoon sorted straight away. Kyle, where can we get you?
Oh, yeah, you can find me here on the Bagel Tech Network, the media show, of course, the photo show, most likely the big show, and the sound podcast starts next week. It should be up next Wednesday.
That's what you said last week.
I lied. I lied.
Macintosh Quadra 630 for you. Yeah, you can see the evolution, can't you? You see, it's where it's coming from. Definitely. Well, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Well, Twitter. Oh, phone's ringing.
So not only is his phone ringing, but he said you're here, man. Thanks, mate.
I'm not allowed to say that.
No.
Right, you can get hold of me at www.britishmac.com or on Twitter, it's britishmac.com/Twitter. I can hear myself talking now. The answer machine's going.
Has anyone found the Macintosh TV in here, in Classic Macs? October 1993. That was where the hobby started. £2,097 dollars it cost. And it had a startup chime. Same one. Oh, that's interesting. You can get hold of me, Ewan Rankin, on Twitter, at Ewan Rankin, or you can get me on at Bagel Tech News, which is where I post most of my turgid rubbish. So there we go. You can listen to us on iTunes. So go there and you can subscribe through our podcast page at bageltechnews.com. Or you can just turn up and watch us in the chat room stuttering around with a video system with an underpowered machine. It's your choice. Have a good week. See you next week.